To another episode of Podnuts Pro, I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from the great state of Florida, where I will not be talking about the weather today.
Thank you.
And that voice you heard is my guest today. You heard him, I think it was about 18 months ago or so, from the great state of New Jersey, Mr. Tom Bull from Two River Computer. Tom, how are you?
Marvin, thanks for having me back on. Good to see you.
All right. Glad to have you here. And I don't have any really huge announcements or housekeeping to take care of, so we're really just going to get right into the show. So I guess, first of all, let's do a quick recap of not just who you are and where you're from, but I know that we had talked about your company the last time you were on the show, episode 175. So just give us a quick recap of you and your company.
All right, quickly, not to take too much of the time away from the meat and potatoes of this fine podcast. So
don't be buttering up the host.
I was supposed to do that before we went on.
Yeah.
So I've been in IT technically since 1981. I started working for a manufacturer, computer manufacturer. We made computerized modules that controlled slide projectors, film projectors, lights, and sound. We were using paper tape and magnetic tape and eventually floppy disks and stuff, but it was computers nonetheless. And after about 5 years, they started making business computers. So for me, that was around 1984, 1985, and they transferred me from New Jersey to Southern California. And I was working right when the IBM PC kind of came out, and all of the other clones, the Columbia, the Osborne, the Apollo, all of these other,
okay,
A-Pro,
yes,
Commodore, all of those names, right? So we were competing, and my company's spinoff was called Eagle Computer, and they were a pretty big player. They were producing large number of computers, and I had my hands in just about every aspect of that part of the business. So the AV side, the ones that were controlling the slide projectors and stuff, I was the service manager. So I had customer service stuff and repair things and testing things. And then they would use me when they would build a new prototype. And it was really fun because they would, I was in charge of the prototype team, and they asked me to pull together a handful of the best technicians. And some of them came from engineering. Some of them came from manufacturing. Some of them came from service. And we would build the first 20 or 25 computers. And then, you know, on the count of three, we'd push the button and see how many of them turned on, how many of them blew up, how many of them, you know, didn't turn on at all. So from the manufacturing side of computers, and the accounting side even, and marketing, got a really good exposure to business in general. So that whole time period was about 10 years. Then I spent 15 years. I started a company with my friend. And for 15 years from that point on, I was doing B2B, taking people from paper to computer, mostly accounting, some office automation stuff like contact management and the basics, word processing, but mostly accounting. Back when Novell NetWare was the big player, you know, way before Windows NT.
Oh, Novell, yes.
Yeah, I
Groupware,
I still have my,
and
my CNE, my 3.12 CNE, that I haven't touched, obviously, in 20 years. Then Windows for Workgroups and Lantastic. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Yeah, my first server was actually a Novell.
No kidding.
Yep.
That was good stuff. I mean, I remember when NT came out, we would look at, like, the Windows servers, you had to reboot them like once a week.
Yes.
And you go over to a NetWare server and it says its uptime was like 642 days. You know, it was like Linux. It never, you know, you never had to babysit it like you do.
Yep.
But there was this networking product called Lantastic. And it had its own network cards and its own OS, and it sat on top of Windows. And it used 10 base 2 coax connectors and 10BASE-T stuff to connect the computers together to create shares, network shares that we know today. And Windows for Workgroups kind of killed it. But the concept was, and they even had a cool thing. I was thinking about it before. Had a couple things. One of them was called modem share. It was a bank. It was a box that would hold those PCMCIA modems.
Yes.
Like those 56, those credit card looking modems, like 10 of them in this box. And it would plug into 10 phone lines and you would be able to network the internet connection to everybody on the LAN. So it was pretty, you know, I mean, for 1995, it was pretty cool.
Now, were you using that for voice or were you using that for the RRAS? No. RRAS for the remote connections and that
sort of thing?
They
weren't coming in. They were going out.
Going out,
I mean, back then there was not a lot of internet. There was some email, but it was more for EDI for some of the people that I was doing business with that were transacting with manufacturers and bigger vendors.
Right.
So it was almost always in an accounting setting, almost always. And then they had like, a bunch of other things. It was really fun, really fun time to be coming up. And then obviously moved into all the Windows stuff. So anyway, 15 years doing that B2B thing. And my last project didn't go well. We had money stolen from partners and underhanded shenanigans going on. It was really a bad scene and ended up actually leaving that company and going out on my own back in 2006. I used a grant from the state of New Jersey. When I filed for unemployment, they said, hey, you're kind of, a savvy guy and you're not your typical person that comes to unemployment. Let's put you in this program that we're going to teach you some stuff about starting a business. And at the end, which was about 4 or 5 months, at the end, we want you to start a business so you can create jobs in the great state of New Jersey. So that's what I did.
Okay. So that is interesting. Now, how was it that they identified you to be in this program?
Yeah. So I think like most of it, this is going to be really bad. Don't judge me. We started this last company. There was five of us. And there was a guy kind of over us that was guiding us and helping us, but also stealing money from us. And when the company started to go down, I was in denial and I was clinging to it and didn't want to let go. And I was the last guy out. And, so I go to file for unemployment, and what they do is like, if you quit, there's like often a delay and sometimes a denial.
Right.
You get fired, it's almost absolute, right? So, they're trying to track this guy down to get the facts and they can't get him. They're emailing him and calling him and leaving messages and everything. And so finally they go, look, we're going to start paying you because we can't get a hold of him. Turns out he was in the hospital, had a heart attack. And I'm like going, yeah, man,
right.
That was like not a good moment for me. I felt bad, but I did not feel bad for this guy, but he recovered. He's fine, but I got the money. And so they give you money and then you have to go for an interview and they talk to you about what you want to do and, where you're going to go apply for a job. And at that time, the job that I left, I was making pretty good money. So, I was kind of in a different area of unemployment. And so after they interviewed me, they said, hey, you're probably a good candidate for this. What do you think? And I'd been thinking about it for years, but when my kids came along, I got kind of scared about going out on my own. But it seemed like the time was right. So I did.
Okay. So you started with money from a grant. Nice.
No money.
Oh, it was
what
no
I
money.
Got. No, what I got was 90 hours of education at the local community college. So
the grant was for the class then.
The grant was for the class. Okay. Yes, I should have made that clear. Thank you. I spent time in marketing, which I was a director of marketing for a manufacturer. So I kind of knew marketing. They gave me accounting, which I kind of knew. They did some legal stuff, some tax stuff, some business formation stuff. So kind of like the everything that you would need to know to start a business. And so at the end, the guy who was proctoring the whole thing sat me down. We filled out the form. We created the LLC. We looked it up, made sure it wasn't taken. I wrote the check and walked out of there with an LLC. And that was about all. So, just this kind of a loose business plan on what I was going to do and how I was going to start the business, which was kind of an extension of what I've already been doing. And I think people do this all the time. They fall into what's comfortable or easy and what they think they can succeed at. And the last thing I was doing was a combination of really high-end voice data video implementations, a lot of it in Manhattan, in like big bank boardrooms and, you know, kind of really big stuff, video teleconferencing and voice over IP back then using 3Com. Do you remember when 3Com was doing voice over IP?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember the over ISDN you had to get to have good quality.
ISDN, that's right. Yeah, how about that? Good for you. So we were doing selling dial tones, selling PRIs, T1s, you know, all of that stuff. So it was kind of really high end, but the niche that I served was, I call it business process engineering, where I would look at a company's business process literally with sticky notes on a whiteboard, moving them around and trying to find the right flow, and then using technology to kind of hack away at the steps and make it more efficient. And so that was my thing. So that's kind of what I started doing when I started Two River Computer in 2006.
Okay. So, of course, we're going to go off script because you just opened up a whole new line of questioning for me. So as you were going
There's a script?
people wouldn't believe us if we told them.
I know.
So as you were going through this course, so you said it was 4 to 5 months. Did you have an initial vision of what Two River Computer was going to be at that time, or was it something that kind of built up as you were going through this process and it came through at the end? How did that process go?
That's a great question, Marvin. There was about 25 people in the class. So same, you know, it all started at the same time. It started in May of 2006. And a bunch of people already in the class, somebody who had already known what they were going to do, like people who had just bought a franchise. There was a couple of them. There was a couple of people who had been in doing what they were doing kind of maybe as a side hustle and wanted to turn it into something real. So I kind of had a vague idea of what I wanted. I didn't want the same thing that I had experienced because it was very high pressure, very high stress. And there's a point where I didn't like it. I've always liked solving problems. I always liked being people's hero. The business had become very cutthroat. It was very stressful and challenging, lots of intricate, complicated networks. It was just not my bag. So I thought I was going to really kind of not dumb it down, but really make it a lot smaller, more manageable, and try to bring the fun back to it for me. And so my slogan in my head, my wife's the only one who knew it at the time, was big homes and small businesses. And that's all I really wanted. I wanted the high income homes that they wanted to, they didn't mind paying for service or pay a premium for service in home. They wanted to do some more of the fancier things. And then the small business people that were neglected. So I figured I could help them with all kinds of things. So I actually went in, I wanted to call myself something else. I wanted to be like Two River Technology Consultants or something a little broader. And the marketing guy convinced me that I needed to be specific. So side story kind of, I picked Two River Computer because that's what I knew the best. That's what I felt the most comfortable putting my stamp on. But here we go off on the side thing. So a couple of years later, you know, it's more than just computers, right? So I'm like, you know, I want to be Two River Technology. That sounds so much better. You know, so I go to get it and it's already taken and it's a competitor kind of, but he's more of an MSP guy, not really doing what I'm doing, but he's already got the name. So I go to his website, I go to tworivertechnology.com and it's not there. There's nothing there. He's tworivertech.com. So don't I go and grab tworivertechnology.com? And we've been getting some of his clients because they call up and they go, hey, you haven't been here. What's going on? We keep calling. Oh, you called the wrong place. Maybe you need a change. So anyway, so to answer your question, I did not have a full vision of what I wanted. I kind of knew, and my business plan looks nothing like what the business is today. That means anything.
Well, it was funny. I wanted to ask that because I know that some people have asked me how I came into this industry and have my business, and this is now we're heading into year number 23.
Wow.
But, you know, I was a latecomer to the tech industry. I did not want to be a tech. You know, I thought I was either going to play professional ball or be president. And
neither. What kind of ball?
So I wanted to play football, but I was better at basketball.
How about that?
So I got one scholarship offer for basketball. That was in the state of South Carolina. And at the time, I thought, I am not going to South Carolina. I didn't get that scholarship offer from Florida State or Duke. So I did not play basketball there. But I found, so I don't know why I've kept this stuff, but I found my original folder when I was working at the local computer store. That's what I did for 2 years. When the owner finally convinced me to come work for him, because I had been doing stuff on the side and rebuilding computers and bringing them to him and selling them. And he was like, you're building computers better than my techs. When are you going to come work for me? And I said, well, when you can afford me. And so finally he did. But during the course of that, I always felt like there were opportunities that he missed that we could have capitalized on, one of which was on-site business support, especially for businesses. Because everybody would come in and be like, I don't want to bring my computer to you. Can you come to my office?
Sure.
No, we can't. Now, what he did allow us to do is work after hours or on the weekends, as long as we bought our parts from him.
Okay.
Which were retail prices. So we weren't going to make money off the parts. So I did that. And found myself to the point where I'm like, I can make more money on my own than I'm making there. And so I'm going to hold this up to you. It's horrible for an audio podcast, but this is my original sketch of the store that I thought I was going to have.
Good for you, man. That's awesome.
Back in 1997.
That's awesome.
And I refined it, and I even had laid out how many salespeople I was going to have, how many techs I was going to have.
I love it.
I was going to have a conference room on one side. I was going to have a teaching center on the other side.
I love the vision, man. That's great.
And didn't do any of that.
So, well, so did you start doing it and then got sidetracked, or you just follow the money?
So when I did finally leave, I quickly realized that going from home to home wasn't cutting it. And I figured I either had to find a place soon to do a store, or I started to focus more on business. And I actually got lucky where I had a couple of things happen all pretty much simultaneously. I got two law firms that were willing to pay me a retainer. I got a school that paid me to put together their lab, their computer lab of about 25, 30 computers.
Nice.
And then I ran into a representative of the paint company PPG. And he said, I could use you going around to all the body shops and putting in their servers.
Nice.
And so I, you know, lucked into those situations and I stayed with it. And then a few years later, I ran into a software consultant for the legal industry. That's how I got into the law offices, and that's where I've been ever since. And it was where I lucked into situations, and they were good, and they worked, and I didn't have to fight for the money. So
that's great. That's a great, you know, I can remember, I mean, the idea of doing business, and I've been doing business service for a really long time. The closest thing we came to like any recurring revenue was selling blocks of time. So we didn't do retainers, but we did, you know, here's 25 hours, 50 hours, 100 hours at a reduced rate, and we'll just chip away at it, and then we'll make you buy it again. And that worked okay. But it was years after I had started Two River Computer that I ran into an MSP who was giving me smaller things that he didn't want to, you know, deal with. And we're talking, and talking about the state of the industry and computers in general. And he's talking to me about managed stuff. And he's like, if you're not managing computers, you're leaving money on the table. And I was like, fight me, jerk. I don't need business advice from you. And then I was totally wrong, which I've been totally wrong a lot of times. I mean, that's how you learn. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, so it's about 6 years ago that I started doing some managed stuff. So,
all right. So Two River Computer, and I remember us talking about this the last time, and I don't think I asked you really specific questions about it, but I know that you do both business and residential support.
That's right.
I know you've got a team of 5 or 6 people there. Now, is your building, is it a retail store where you have customers walk in?
Customers do walk in, but it's not, it doesn't have that retail store feel. So we are in an old, the original volunteer fire company building in town. So the building's super old, over 100 years old. So it's really long. So I'll say deep. So it's really deep. Uh-huh. So like imagine a hook and ladder having to go in. And then it's got a second floor and even an attic, but it's about 35 feet tall. So it's really tall, really high ceilings, and it's got a lot of character. It's in the historic district of town. So I'm really kind of limited what I can do, but I am on the entire second floor, which is about 1500 square feet. And then I'm breaking into, I took more space downstairs. But prior to that, we put, when I moved in there about 6 years ago, we put a dumbwaiter in. You know what a dumbwaiter is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I call it a computer elevator.
I was going to say, why would you put that in? But now that as soon as you said, you know, computers, you know, you probably load them in there to send it on up instead of having.
And it's not even that big. It'll take a 27-inch iMac. That's when I built it. I was like, that's how big I want it. And it takes it from the first floor to the second floor because since it's this enormous firehouse, people walk in and they look up the stairs and it's 20 stairs plus a landing. So it's like, it's a lot of stairs.
Right.
And so they put the computers in the elevator and they send it up. And that's great. And I've got a really nice lab up there and a really nice lobby and stuff. And so, yes, people come in and out probably, I'd say anywhere from a half dozen to 15 people a day come in and out of there. But the field techs also work at it. And they'll bring stuff back and leave it for a bench tech to kind of complete.
They work out of the first floor?
No, not yet. So the first floor is going to be reception, so people won't have to go up and down the stairs.
Okay.
And then we'll put the computer in the elevator. That's why I was talking about, and we'll get to this, the video intercom, where, excuse me, Bob, can you send down 22409? This is Fields is here to pick up her computer. Right. So we could send it down the elevator and, you know, that kind of thing. So downstairs will be the field guys. And because I need the bench guys. The bench guys need more room. We're running out of room. We're kind of outgrowing the space, which is a great, great problem, but a problem nonetheless. So take a little space downstairs for reception and the field techs, and then the bigger space upstairs for the shop tech. So, yes, is it retail-ish?
Okay.
We don't sell anything. There's nothing on pegboards, and people don't come and buy mice and cables from us.
No lettering on the outside window saying sale.
Never.
Anything like that.
Never. Never a sale, never a discount, never a coupon. No.
Oh, I heard a great saying today, and I have to go back and finish listening. I was listening to another podcast, and it was not IT related, but I get business ideas from other podcasts.
Sure.
And the guy was talking about he does IT, or not IT, he does interior design. And he's in an area where he does high-end homes, and he does, one room, maybe $30,000-$40,000 to redo a room. And he talked about, in the beginning, what made him get to his pricing structure was, his whole process. And he had an epiphany with talking to one of his clients that was trying to beat him up on price. And he said, I finally got to the point where I looked at her and I said, millionaires don't get discounts.
That's so awesome.
That's what you reminded me of when you talk about never a sale. And I'm thinking, that quote
awesome.
Stuck with me for some reason. And I'm going
to
find a way.
I've only had to resort to this a few times, but it's very effective. So if people call up and you say, you know, and I'm reusing this one, but so I have two. The one is they call up and we, you know, say, how much are you? And we say $179 an hour. And they say, wow, $179 an hour, that's a lot. I'm like, well, you're not paying for the hours, you're paying for the years of experience. You're not paying for the hours of labor, you're paying for the years of experience. And that's a good one. And people kind of get that, especially when you go in and you do something in less than an hour. You know, it's like the I don't want to use the plumber analogy, but the appliance repairman that comes in and changes a little 5-cent wash.
Right.
And charges you $200. And somehow people don't get upset about that. But the other thing, when people bring up price, I always say to them, you know, you're talking about price and apparently that's really important to you, but don't you want to ask me anything else? How long I've been in business, my certified,
right,
my insured, mm-hmm. Do you want to ask me any of that? Because that kind of is pretty important. And if price is your leading thing, we're probably not meant for each other. And they either go away or they backpedal. And, you know, no one likes to be told no. You know, no, don't tell me I can't have it because I want it
right.
even more.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm running into that. And I am looking at rephrasing a lot of the terminology because I don't want to respond to people with an hourly rate.
Yeah.
You know, and so basically I've, you know, in the past, I've done things where I talked about, well, you know, we don't charge by the hour because we charge by the contract.
See?
So that kind of like, oh, we got to have a contract to be with you. Yes. Yep.
That's so funny. I'm just about, I'm writing my new auto attendant for the phone system.
Right.
And it's going to say press one for contracts, press one if you're under contract, press two if you're not. And it doesn't matter which one you press. All the phones are going to ring. But it's going to make the people think about it. And we say, oh, yeah, you get preferential treatment if you're under contract. But I mean, if you're not under contract, you got to bring it to them.
Right.
If you're under contract, we'll come to you. That's the difference.
Nice.
So we service many small businesses, but they have to bring it to us.
Nice.
So and we make our same amount, and it's great. I'm very happy.
Okay. All right. So we got off track. So let me go back to where we were with you expanding space. And I saw that you had... Yeah. Put a mention on the Facebook about this video conferencing because you were taking on an additional floor. So that's what prompted me to ask you about the retail space and are you growing and expanding and how are you doing so? So tell us about what type of responses you got and what did you end up doing for this video system or have you done it yet?
So I'm going to take this opportunity to roll back just a little bit. So
okay.
The thing that I did in 2006 through the state and unemployment to help me even get started kind of came about again last year. I got nominated for this thing through the federal government, through the Small Business Administration. It was called the Emerging Leaders Program. And you had to meet the certain criteria, certain size, certain revenue and body count for employees to be even considered, go through a couple interviews and fill out some paperwork. And from 900 something applicants, they picked 12 and I was one of them. So I had to go to Rutgers Business School in Newark once a week for 7 months. And it was a much deeper experience than what I went through back in 2006. So it wasn't 90 hours. It was, I don't know, somebody do the math for me. Yeah, 6 hours times however many weeks that is, 28 weeks. So I spent a lot more time, twice as much, maybe more, and doing very in-depth stuff and coming out of there with a growth plan, a 3-year growth plan. And one of the first things that I needed to grapple with was everything from defining my ideal client and really marketing to them to stop sitting on the fence. And I'm good at a lot of things, as my neighbor likes to say, I'm good at a lot of things, including overthinking. So you got to kind of dive in. So I dove in. We got a new vehicle. We hired another technician. I hired Matt Rodella and Ramey Bell with Tech Marketing Engine to kind of retool our story. I took on more space. So I'm really kind of buying in, going all in to this thing. So that brings me to the other space. And my question to the group was, I'm going to be down there. I'm going to have an employee down there and they're, anxious about being separated from the rest of the group, you know, because they're there and there's this socialization thing that happens when everybody works together. You know, so-and-so's on the phone again.
You're talking about the receptionist that you're going to have down there.
But she runs the place. Phyllis is my work wife. She nags me properly, you know, and she's the perfect balance of, you know, nag and operations genius. So she gets it all done. And so having her down there is because she's the face and the voice of the company. So I need her down there, but then she's separated from everybody because the field guys will be gone most.
Right.
So she'll be kind of down there by herself. So I almost wanted a way for her to be connected to upstairs. And I maybe didn't phrase it right, but I said, I don't want to use Microsoft Teams. I was thinking like a two-way intercom or a two-way that Facebook portal or the Google Hub or, you know, whatever. There's another one. There's the Amazon Show. And, you know, is there a way to have that kind of always open, always live so they can wave to each other, blow kisses or whatever they do?
I know Logitech has something similar too, like a Logitech Huddle or something. Is that what it is?
But that was more of the Huddle was more of a meeting device. Okay. So you'd throw it in the middle of a conference room table and you'd huddle around it.
Right. Okay.
And you'd be able to have a meeting. So I think Teams is kind of the best answer. It does what I need it to do, but not the way that I want to do it.
Hmm. So you would do Teams with a webcam or something so that they would.
Yeah, I was going to put a webcam on everybody and then chase them to their phones because they're not always standing in front of their computer. You know, because the technicians are up moving about, they're not always at their desk. They're fixing that computer over there.
Right.
You know, or they're in the bathroom or going to get coffee. Answer your phone. I don't care where you are.
All right. So that's in process, it sounds like.
Yeah, the space will be done this month. Well, in February, and we'll be moving in and making announcements for that stuff. So it's kind of a big deal for us. It's probably not a big deal for my user community, which is really kind of small, very boutique-y. We're in a very high income area where people prefer to come to a local than to drive out to an Apple store. So I got four of our guys are Apple certified. So there's some comfort in us saying that and being that and then reading that. We get a lot of, you know, what do they say that nationally or internationally that it's a 9-to-1 ratio? There's only 10% Apple out there. But in our community, it's probably more like 40. We fix a lot of that.
Okay. A lot. Now, in terms of your business, I know that you know, considered yourself wrong about doing managed services and leaving money on the table. Have you made a flip on that? And how much of the business is MSP versus break fix? You talked about having field guys that are still going out. Are they going out for your managed service customers? Or are they going out for the break fix?
So I guess I'm like the textbook definition of what a hybrid is, right? So am I in transition? I don't think I'll ever transition completely. I mean, if I did, I've considered maybe splitting the companies completely.
Okay.
That's an option. Right now I'm going to split them figuratively, and a little literally by having the field guys downstairs. But, the managed services, I currently manage about 300 endpoints, 320 something endpoints, which is a blend of business and residential. And that only represents about 12% of my overall revenue. So, and I, one of my goals, part of my 3-year goal in the class that I took was to get that up to 50%, 50. So, and I've got 3 years to do that. And I'm slowly doing it. And any new clients that come on, any new business clients, the first time you meet me, if you call me, we've never done business, we'll come and solve your problem. But then if you want another call, you have to go under contract. I don't want to turn anybody away. It's a very small community. So
right.
I'll do it. And that's what the field guys are doing. And the field guys are doing lots of our non-contract work or move add change work to existing managed service, because that's not covered. I'm not an all-you-can-eat setup. I have a much lower buy-in rate. I only charge $30 per computer per month, but what they get is they get the monitoring, the patch management, the managed AV, the web filtering, and then they'll get a measure of remote support to keep things running. You know, I can't print, my QuickBooks isn't working, kind of thing. But anytime it's a new user, a new software, a new email address, a new anything, it's billable.
Okay.
At a reduced rate. So it works for me. I'm making money. I'm profitable. I'm not greedy. And it's month to month, which I know is against what a lot of people, you know, they want to do an annual contract. We don't. But one big plus is we don't have any servers. I said that I wasn't going to do that because that was a large part of my stress.
Hmm.
You know, for some of the bigger accounts that we had, servers go down, everybody's there with their thumb up their butt, and the management's leaning on you hard, and we've got to coerce a technician or an engineer to go on site on a Saturday or a Sunday. And I'm just like, I really don't want to do that. So I kind of don't do that at all. So it's really kind of low key for me, but yes, I'm in managed service. It only is about 12%, but my goal by the end of the year is to be to 20. So almost double by the end of the year.
All right. So 50% in 3 years. So you're talking about a couple of big jumps after this first year. How have you defined your transition of people from break fix into your contract? Is it something where your business is, you know, is where your focus is going to be to get them on contract first, or are you going to also transition residential onto a contract?
So the numbers, when you look at it, I'm glad you brought that part up. So I'm really looking to get, you know, about 8% more, you know, to get to 20%, which is really like almost not doubling, but, you know, really increasing what I've got already by the end of the year. And then 15% per year after that to try and get to that number. So I think it's a totally doable number. It's realistic. I think it's possible. So the number of options available to small businesses in our area are really limited. And I work with some friendly competitors, some MSPs. I mean, they're not physically close to me, but like there's a guy, actually one guy is, he's only about a mile away, but he only takes like 50 users and above. And then another guy that's about 5 miles away only takes 25 users and above. And another guy that, you know, 10 miles away that takes only 10 users and above. And I really want 10 and below. In fact, I like 5 and below.
Wow.
But I want a lot of them. I want a lot of them because I always felt for the length of time that I've been in this business that every site intrinsically has a value to it all of its own. And I would rather have 5-10 user sites than 150 user site. I think I make more money in the end, and my history has proven that in the space that I work in the way that I work. So it may not be the same. Your mileage may vary.
Right.
So it kind of depends. But yes, so all new business, they have to be under contract or they can't play this. Residential clients, we'll go on site. They're paying our amount. And if it comes to a point where I cannot manufacture more hours, where I have to like hire more techs to go out and install printers, that's where I'll cut it off. I mean, the on-site work that we're doing is kind of high-end audio video stuff, theaters and whole house sound and some smart home stuff, which I really love doing. That's really the only stuff that Tom does anymore. I don't go on-site and do a lot of anything at all, but if I am doing it, it's either smart home or AV stuff. But yeah, I mean, if they're going to pay our, they're going to pay our price, and I'm slowly trying to weed out those people by raising the price, you know, make more money for less work. And I'm keeping people employed. We've got 7 families that we're, you know, keeping going, and 8 if you include mine. And I'm happy with how it's going. So I'm going to keep it going.
All right. That does sound a little counterintuitive to what others are doing, because a lot of people are getting rid of those, you know, 10 and unders.
Yep.
Interesting. So Let's go to the smart home, because I am looking at, I don't want to get back into residential, but the IoT market within the business space, I'm looking to capture something on that. So when you're doing the smart home stuff, are you talking about just simply installing, or are you also talking about monitoring?
No monitoring. I don't see the value. If I can't convince myself, I won't be able to convince others. I don't see a value in monitoring, and I don't think that people. If properly firewalled, what am I monitoring? Am I watching to see if a light bulb burned out, or what am I looking for?
Okay.
That's the thing. I have that same problem with some of the Wi-Fi stuff. Like, I know some of the AV guys, I'm trying to convince some of the local guys that I work with that do bigger projects than I do. I give them the bigger stuff. They give me the smaller stuff, that they should be on monthly recurring revenue for their stuff, including the Wi-Fi stuff. And in a business, I know you could tack that on, but my businesses are so small. They have like one Wi-Fi access.
Right. Okay.
And I bundle it in there. So.
All right. Well, that's probably not going to go the way I thought it was, because I am looking to add that stuff on, especially, you know, the Wi-Fi monitoring with the tablets and all of that, because I've got a couple of compliance issues with
clients. Well, that's different. Okay. I mean, when you said IoT, in business, I'm not seeing that. I mean, I'm doing it more in a home. I'm talking about thermostats and door locks and cameras and light bulbs.
Here's why I brought that up. One of my law firm customers is also opening up a co-working space that is going to be separate from their business, but they want us to also help them with that. And so we've started talking about not just doing their regular networking, but being able to do more management of the Wi-Fi, because with the co-working space, they're going to have memberships. And, you know, they're also going to have people that may pay for the day. Or, you know, for half a day or something, and they want to be able to turn on and off Wi-Fi sure. access when somebody leaves. So that's sure. something where we have to actually monitor that sort of stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
And then we're talking about integrating door access control,
sure.
Cameras, and all of that stuff that they want to be able to all manage from either the reception desk or a tablet, or have me and a couple of other people be able to do it remotely.
Sure.
So that's why I kind of was asking, because I'm thinking, okay, a lot of that really comes from this IoT stuff. So I've been using a product called Domotz, Domotz. I'm in my third month. I just am going to be installing my third box this weekend that actually will work pretty good, I think, because not only is it going out and finding, you know, all the network stuff, the PCs, the servers, the switches, which one of the things I love about it, it's just a little box. I don't know. Did you sign up with Arachnus or SnapAV for any of their products?
I got the Wattbox.
Okay. So one of the products that I had been starting to use was their Oversee box, which was basically a little
right,
hub.
I saw that.
And I'm just not really happy with it. And, you know, it's nice. It does a couple of speed tests, you know, for internet. You can see some devices, but you can't remotely connect to everything. But with the Domotz box, I've been able to connect to almost everything. And I can see into things like my switches, where I can actually see which device is connected to which switch. And they have a feature that I used this past week, and it came to actually bite us in the butt, but it was the customer's butt that got bit, because I asked them and they said, do it. But it was a remote office where we had just moved them. And I put this in and we itemized all the devices that were on the network. I've got it documented, how many PCs, how many printers. And this new device came online and nobody knew what it was. And so I asked them, I said, well, what do you want me to do? I can block it, because we thought it might be, they're still doing construction in the space and it's, you know, it might have been a worker plugging in to a switch sure. or whatever. And he said, well, just block it. So I did. And that's a thing I can do remotely from the app. I can block the port on the switch.
Sure.
or I can do what's called pause the device. So the first thing I did was I blocked the port on the switch. And then 2 days later, it pops up on another port on the switch. And so I called the customer. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, block it again. So I paused the device. So no matter where it popped up on the network, it would, you know, connect and then pause.
Sure.
Well, it turns out it was their postage machine.
Oh, God.
they were freaking out over. And sure. They have a junior who was going to this office and moving the postage machine around and talking sure. to Pitney Bowes. And they're saying, well, put it on this network and give it a static IP address and do this. And of course, nothing How was funny. Working.
How funny.
But they love the idea that, oh, well, too bad we blocked the postage machine, which all I had to do was go into the app, unpause, and we were good. But they didn't call me to tell me that that's what it was that they were trying to connect. So they love that idea for the co-working space.
Sure.
Where we can, you know, if somebody doesn't pay or somebody tries to sneak in or, you know, whatever, we can pause their device. And so they can't get on the network. So that's what I'm looking at.
Pause the device. That's good.
Yep. All right.
So when you said IoT, I mean, to me, IoT is garage door openers, vacuums, light bulbs, thermostats, teddy bears, nanny cams, all of those Wi-Fi things that are not PCs or printers.
Well, yeah, and I'm not sure where the line is because for me, sure. you know, cameras, you know, and door access control, you know, which is the same as home locks for people. So it's all those types of things that are non-traditional techie stuff.
Sure.
That are now going to be possibly present on our networks.
Sure.
And for companies that are doing what this, you know, this co-working space, because I know what's going to happen. They're going to see this technology that they put in the co-working space, and they're going to say, well, can we put that in our office? Can we put that in our law firm?
Sure. Yeah. Good for you, man.
So it'll be interesting. I really am excited about the opportunity and want to play with it. So I have the dumbbell.
So I'm just going to have a quick IoT thing. So my first client that I managed, I did only because they needed to manage AV, and this was 6 years ago, and that's all I had for 6 months was 10 computers with the managed AV using GFI, so SolarWinds. And anyway, fast forward to a month ago, where now they have a Sonic Wall and we're monitoring that. And so we get an alert from SolarWinds that one of the computers is being attacked, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a brute force attack. So we see who the user is and we're like, oh, they're out of the Connecticut office. What's the IP address? So we go look at the Connecticut office and we go, yeah, it's not even the same subnet. So, oh, she must be on site because that's what they do. They're a bunch of laptops that just move all over. So we call her up and we go, where are you? Where are you? You're that network's being attacked. She's like, I'm at home. So it turns out she had bought some IPTV device from Amazon. And somebody had tunneled through that sucker and it was banging away at her computer. And so I'm like, look, you got to unplug that thing. So she unplugged it and the login stopped. And then she ended up putting it on, you know, we said, look, if you want to still use it, you're going to put it on your guest network. But if I'm you, I would take it out back and shoot it.
Wow.
You work for a bank examiner that has access to bank information for a lot of really big banks. I'm like, I'm pretty sure this wouldn't go over real well with your boss.
Right. Interesting.
Crazy stuff that, you know, off a little, you know, it's like one of those hacked, what did Amazon, they had those fireboxes that were like jailbroken. Do you remember what they were called?
No, I'm not in the Amazon world.
They were selling it on eBay. And it was unlocked and it could do Kodi, K-O-D-I.
Oh, so, okay. I've heard of that.
That's bad news.
Really?
It's apparently bad news. Yeah. I don't know that much about it.
That was a way to get free TV, I heard.
Exactly. So, and yeah, because the Chinese are coming in, you know, the originating IP address was coming from China. So. Hmm. Yeah, go figure.
Yeah. Anyway. I got the Alexa tower thingy to play music in here. And sure. Once I heard that Alexa was listening, just like Facebook was listening, I unplugged it because I didn't use it for anything else. Even though everybody's like, oh, you can use it to turn on your lights. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that.
Alexa, turn off the dining room light.
There you go.
Alexa, turn the dining room light to 30%. So you're in. It's a good thing for us. So I always am experimenting because my clients want this stuff. So I have like every version of every different thing. But so I've got Sonos and I can tell her to play music in the bedroom and I can, you know, tell her to do all kinds of things. And I've got the door lock. But the best thing is the automation. As simple as it is, like certain lights come on at sunset and they go off at 11 and the thermostat does this and that. And, you know, it's some of it's just straight up cool and some of it's very useful.
All right. And some of it's freaking me out.
So I don't really give a shit. Google already knows everything about us anyway. So I don't really care.
You've got to listen to my show I did a couple of weeks ago with Corey Fruitman on how to de-Google your life.
I don't want to de-Google. I like it. Okay. I like when I go somewhere and it says, hey, you bought these shirts before. These pants will go really good with it. Wouldn't you like that? I do like it.
Okay.
The AI component stuff is good for me. I like it.
All right. I think it'll be just fine. I'll adjust to it. I know I'm the boomer in the room, so I'll just live with that. So, okay, we are going much longer than I thought because we have good conversations, and that's okay.
Okay, good. All right.
But I did want to ask you at least a couple more questions and get an answer. And you've kind of told us a little bit, I think, but the question I was going to ask specifically was, what is the one thing that you can point to as the reason for your success? And that could be something in the last year, 10 years. What is the one thing that has really stood out to make things work for you?
So I think that, you know, I don't think that question can be answered. I don't think it's any one thing.
Okay.
It might be a philosophy, maybe, if I was going to characterize it or put it in a box. I think for me, it's customer service. So I've always liked helping people. I've always liked being a hero. Knowing something that somebody else didn't know is very empowering, and solving it and getting paid for it and you know, is really fun. I learned customer service at a very early age working in retail. And then I worked at a country club in high school as a caddy, and it was kind of a snooty country club. And I realized that if you suck up to rich people, they give you money.
Yes.
So I kind of transitioned that into my business, and I'm sucking up to these high income earner homes, and I'm doing good work for them and putting in good things and getting paid nicely for it and really enjoying it. So I think it's attention to detail. I mean, I have my core values, which are, they're kind of these textbook things. We need to be high energy and we need to worry about the fundamentals. We need to execute and we need to always do the right thing. All of that is a customer service experience. And I say that to people, once you get the Two River Computer experience, you won't want to go to the mall or to a Best Buy or anywhere else. It's this high touch, hands on, and in a non-technical way, non-threatening and non-technical way, explaining things to people. They don't feel intimidated and they want to buy from you. And you know, we've been successful doing that. And I've been successful teaching the people that work for me how to do that.
That sounds fantastic. And sounds like it's working because you are growing and you've got you've got what sounds like a very doable 3-year plan. So good luck with that. Now, let's move on to what's becoming our favorite part of the show. Florida man versus the world.
I should say
to start, Florida man got his butt kicked, or is getting his butt kicked, all from the last Florida man, where we were going up against Tennessee man, who dipped his testicles in the delivery food. So, ouch. But what were you going to say?
Was it hot delivery food or? Yeah, that's an ouch. Was it tangy? I mean, so in New Jersey, we've got, all kinds of wackiness. But the latest, because I looked it up, The latest thing that's in the same category of creep-worthy Florida man guy is the Uber Eats guy that was caught masturbating when delivering the food.
Yeah.
So he's outside in the car, and the people are like, "Where's my food?" They go outside, and he, you know, playing his play. What did the George's mother say in Seinfeld? "You're playing your body like it's an amusement park."
Yes. Oh my. Oh, send me a link for that. Cheese and crackers. All right. I think for the second week in a row, Florida man may lose. My story basically is a St. Petersburg man who, this is interesting. So he got arrested for setting a fire inside his apartment. And this was within the last week. This was about 6 days ago. The reason he set a fire inside his apartment was because he wanted to stay warm. So the night that the temperatures got around 40 degrees and iguana were falling out of trees,
yes,
apparently he either didn't know he had heat or didn't have heat or a furnace. So he set a fire inside his apartment. Of course, the flames got big enough to set off smoke detectors. No one was injured, but he got arrested.
Wow. So that's like the Darwin Awards. Have you ever heard of those? The people that do just colossally stupid stuff. You should look that up. Google that. The Darwin Awards.
Darwin Awards?
Yeah, you'll see.
I don't know. I may not have...
The evolution of man. I'm very far.
I don't know if I have time. I've been getting so many Florida man emails and notifications that I'm quite surprised how much... I mean, there's a lot of Florida man stuff. just today, was it today? There was a guy that went viral on fighting as the Easter Bunny. Oh, and it's funny. He was in New Jersey. He's got an arrest warrant because he's currently in New Jersey. Oh, I gotta find
that. What's he doing here? God, I don't know. We have enough drama here.
Florida man went there, and apparently he was bragging on Facebook or something, telling the cops to Google him or something. I have to find this.
I remember that. That's vaguely familiar, which is scary because We have a lot of wacky stuff that goes here. So
yeah, here we go. Florida man in Easter Bunny costume caught in viral brawl is wanted in New Jersey, has history of arrests. Unbelievable.
Yay, only in Jersey.
All right, Tom, I want to say thank you for agreeing to come on the show again. It's been a while, and we've had some good conversations. We're going to have more, and they don't always have to be on the show, kind of like the other day when we just sat and chatted and talked about stuff, because I think you're on the right track with having us all talk with each other more about our businesses and helping each other and teaching each other. That's one of the things that has made podcasting great. It has made the community great. And I'm not talking about, you know, just PodNuts. I'm talking about all the communities together because, first of all, not everybody is just in one community. We're in several different communities.
Sure.
So everybody's, sure, you know, in the Facebook groups, in ASCII, you know, in the Tech Tribe and all of these things. But we're all interacting with each other and, you know, sharing ideas with each other and helping each other, you know, do business right.
I have to say that big shout out to Matthew Rodella, because if it wasn't for him, I never would have made it to that first unconvention, my first unconvention in Washington when I first met you. So that was, what, 3 years ago, or is that four? And, you know, I thought, you know, as a business owner, not that I wasn't willing to learn or I was responding to what people wanted around me. I wasn't looking ahead because I was too busy. I was too busy answering questions to, you know, go out and do anything new. So, your friendly neighborhood computer guy, his little newsletter, I was, you know, taking bits from that, and he advertised unconvention. So I went to it, and really eye-opening. I mean, when you're looking at your peers and you're like, oh, wow, you do that and you do this, and some of the really successful people like Bruce Corson and Jason Miller and Dave Greenbaum and So just listening to those people and how they were running their business and what they were doing and getting out of it. And I'm just like taking little pieces, you know, from Knezovich and from everybody that Rick Smith, that just learning things from all of these people in the community. And it's been great. It's helped to make my business better. It's helped to make me better. And, you know, I want to keep it going. It's great.
Well, we are going to do that because I, you know, have to admit the same thing. There's a lot of things I have learned in the last few years by being a part of this community. It's odd. I mean, it was something where I avoided it for a long time for no good reason. Yeah. You know, ignorance basically is what it was. But now that I'm in and I'm meeting so many people because of the podcast that I'm still getting stuff from. So it's not, you know, I have to tell everybody that, you know, I'm doing the podcast for you guys in the community because we're all learning from this and people are coming on the show and sharing their experiences. Vendors are coming on the show and, you know, sharing products and services that we may not hear about. So, you know,
sure.
it's something that, you know, when I sat down a while ago and was considering, you know, whether or not I would continue to do this, I had to realize that, you know, I'm getting just as much out of this for me and my business as I think everybody in the community is getting out of it. And, you know, I can only keep asking everyone that, you know, if you like what's on the show, let me know. If you don't like what's on the show, let me know. Tell me what you want. You know, tell me what you want to hear. Tell me what you want us to talk about. And we'll try to do it and make it happen. And, you know, these things are going to continue. The conferences and Jeff and Paco doing the Unplugged, you know, those are things that we need and we need to support and, you know, keep the conversation going.
I think it's great. I mean, you and the others are a great conduit for this kind of stuff in between shows, right? So if we go to a show and we come away, like TechCon, I came away with 5 pages of things that I needed to do and research and implement and that. And then, you know, I kind of started to do all that. And then I reached the end of my list. And now I've got 6 months or 8 months before the next show. I need to be fulfilled again. I need to be re-energized and find out more. And it's your show and the others that really help keep it alive for me and everybody who's doing what we're doing.
All right. Well, so glad to hear that. And I think people are going to get a lot out of this show. So people will be saying the same thing to you, I'm sure, over the weeks and on the Facebook and stuff. So, Tom, thank you again for coming on, and we will definitely be in touch. I'm sure I will see you at one of these events, probably back in Michigan, and we'll keep the conversation going.
That you will. Thank you, Marvin. Really appreciate your time.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just listened to another episode of Podnuts Pro. On this episode, I had Tom Bill from Two River Computer, and we are going to keep doing these shows, and I will have some great interviews coming up. I've got a couple of vendors lined up in February and some more conversations with other technicians just like you. And all of this basically to help us do our businesses better, stronger, faster. I don't know if that's the right phrase, but that's what I came up with. So that's going to do it for this episode. Be sure to head over to podnuts.com, look at the show notes, and get the links that we've got here. Support the affiliates. And if you want to support the show, click on my Facebook link. If you buy things on Amazon, I'll get a little bit of commission. And I need them because in January, I had somebody must have returned something really big because I'm minus $6.23. So I would like to turn that around. And so anyway, thank you all for listening and subscribing. And until next time, holla.